We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the third canto, chapter 9, entitled Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, text number 7. Kurvanti kava sukkale salabhayanina
Kurvanti kava sukkale salabhayanina
Loba vibhutta manasu kushalani shushva
Loba vibhutta manasu kushalani shushva
Daivena
Daivena
By faith of misfortune bereft of memory,
of you,
prasanga,
from the topics,
sarva,
ashubha,
inauspicious,
vashmana,
curving down.
Vimukha,
turned against.
Indriya,
senses. Yet,
those.
Kurvanti,
act.
Sense gratification.
Shukha,
happiness.
Lesha,
grief.
Lavaya,
for a moment only.
Dinaha,
poor fellows.
Lova vibhuta,
overwhelmed by grief.
Manasaha,
of one whose mind.
Akushalani,
inauspicious activity.
Shastra,
always. Translation. O my Lord, persons who are bereft of the auspicious performance of chanting and hearing about your transcendental activities are certainly unfortunate and are also bereft of good sense. They engage in inauspicious activities, enjoying sense gratification for a very little while. The next question is why people are against such auspicious activities as chanting and hearing the glories and pastimes of the Lord, which can bring total freedom from the cares and anxieties of material existence. The only answer to this question is that they are unfortunate because of supernatural control due to their offensive activities performed simply for the sake of sense gratification. The Lord's pure devotees, however, take compassion upon such unfortunate persons, and in the missionary spirit, try to persuade them into the line of devotional service. Only by the grace of pure devotees can such unfortunate man be elevated to the position of transcendental service. Om Jnanatimandasya Gnanda Salakya Chakshuramitam Yaya Tasmai Sri Guru Namah Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Akadamiyam Dhanati Swarantikam Mukham Karoti Vacharam Pangam Nangeti Kirin Yadkitatamam Vande Shri Gurum Divatayam Shri Chaitanya Vishwaram Paramanam Panchatattvamakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupatam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam Vanchakalpatilvyacha Sakripasindhyevacha Pavitamun Pamiyo Vaishchayo Namah Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Vichananda Shri Adhikti Radha Shri Vasati Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Somehow or other, when Lord Krishna was about to perform the pastime of dancing on the heads of Kaliya, at that time there were already inauspicious omens in the sky. Mother Yasoda saw there was imminent danger, acute danger. Somehow or other, Krishna had gone to the Yamuna along with his cowherd boyfriends and the cows, and what had transpired was that the cowherd boys and cows had both been thirsty due to the hot sun of Vrindavan and had drunk the water of the Yamuna and had just crashed dead to the ground. Somehow or other, Krishna revived the cowherd boys and calves, and they realized that they had been dead and that they had been revived by Krishna. And naturally, when you've just been dead, right, you kind of are a bit in a state of shock. So we can understand the consciousness of the cowherd boys at that time was not exactly like, you know, oh, we've just been dead and see what miracle Krishna performed, now we're back alive. No. We were dead. Yeah? And now we're back alive. Like, how did this all happen? And it's like they were obviously in a confused state of mind. Then Krishna, tightening his belt, jumped from the Kadamba tree into the river Yamuna, and the water rose 1 foot, the entire river, just from a little boy jumping in. And then Krishna was in the water, playing with the water, making musical sounds. I can imagine something like something like making noises in a musical way, in this way indicating what was going to come. The transcendental dance on the head of the serpent. Krishna was already giving a hint. And this music was unbearable to the serpent who appeared from the waters and somehow or other just grabbed Krishna and strangled him in his mane coils and, like, you know, the heads dancing above Krishna. And it took a long time, it took a very long time before Krishna finally freed himself. So the cowherd boys were already emotionally destroyed because they had just been killed and kind of revived, and they were just getting over the shock. And then in the midst of this shocked condition, Krishna was being strangled by a huge serpent. So they nearly died, and their consciousness was like one of the utmost anxiety, disbelief, shock, and you name it, right? I mean, something like what you'd only find with a person who gets caught up in a great disaster. That kind of consciousness. Mother Yasoda, having seen the omens, ran to the spot and only to reach there to, like, possibly even exceed the anxiety of the cowherd boys, right? And it was only Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys who held her back from entering into the water to personally fix up this snake. Right? At that point, when everyone was about to die, when it took so long, when everyone was about to die, then Krishna freed himself and danced. He danced on the woods of Kaliya, and it is said that at that time he revealed that form of Vrindavana Natyavara, yeah, the transcendental dancer of Vrindavan. Right? It wasn't just that he was dancing on the woods of the serpent. One should understand the way he danced, right, was just totally amazing. I mean, nobody can dance like Krishna after all. So the elegance in the dancing and avoiding the hoots that were trying to bite him at the same time and was just captivating everyone's mind. And it was such a contrast of what had been there before that we can understand that all the anxiety and all the fear and even dying and all the big shock that they had been through was just a preparation to increase the effect of getting the darshan of Vrindavana Natyavara. Right. And that Lord, that while he was dancing on the woods of Kaliya, even showed that he was also Gopinath. Because it is said that not everyone could see, but some could see. Sanatana Goswami is writing in the Vriya Bhagavatamrita that at one point Krishna even had a whole rasa dance there on the woods of Kaliya. He invited some gopis there, but by yoga maya, most of the others could not see that. They only saw Krishna dancing, but actually he was dancing on the woods of Kaliya along with the whole group of gopis. So, Vrindavana Natavari, amazing transcendental dancer. And then, Tunda Tandavi, it is described that that very Lord dances on our tongue when we chant the holy name. Krishna dances on our very tongue. That same Vrindavana Natavari. So, how much nectar is there in this holy name? So, how can one not take to it? This is amazing. It is just, one misses out so much transcendental nectar. Or how can one take to it half-hearted? How can one physically take to it but mentally resist it? And turn the chanting, which is nectarian, into a struggle just because one mentally actually doesn't want to do it. And we do it begrudgingly. Without much taste, without much appreciation. So it takes some adjustment to make because the mind is so steeped in offensive behavior that it is not possible to appreciate the holy name. And therefore initially we just chant for purification and without much taste as a duty. To rectify our offensive habits. It is stated that we have two natures. One nature is our constitutional, eternal, blissful nature, which is the nature which relishes every syllable of the holy name, and after having chanted one name, hankers to chant it again. That eternal nature can never stop chanting the holy name, and then we have the nature which is formed by habits. The conditioned nature, by bad offensive habits. And these offensive habits have to be broken, and it's not so easy to break a habit. But that must be done. All these habits must be broken. So we are, therefore, initially taking up the process of chanting Hare Krishna as an austerity. And therefore, people will be not inclined to take to it. However, with a deep philosophical insight, even if there is no taste, one can still get the conviction to do it. And therefore, one needs strong philosophical understanding to be motivated to chant. Otherwise, how could one ever do it? So, therefore, first comes hearing. First comes hearing, and then chanting. First comes understanding the nature of the holy name, the nature of the material world, the nature of sense gratification, the nature of false ego, the nature of bodily identification. And once all this is understood, then we can say no to the material energy, yes to the holy name. Although it may still be experienced as not so easy. So, this is required. Enjoying sense gratification for a very little while. Yes, we can enjoy in the material world. We can enjoy like anything. There's no doubt about it. So many things to enjoy, and people are good at it. They create so many varieties of enjoyment. There's no end to it. So if we want to enjoy sense gratification, it can be done. Just last night, as we were driving through the dark from Antwerp to Radadish, the thermometer at the side of the highway said 3 degrees, and which is quite fresh, right? And just as we were driving through the narrow country roads, there were a boy and girl, not with many clothes on, dressed, but no coats and anything like that, being outside, right, in the cold. I was thinking to myself, wow, just see, you know, they don't feel the cold, right? The fire of lust is so powerful that even 3 degrees means nothing to them, right? Everyone else is like, you know, walking from the car to the house, and let's close, let's turn up the heater a little, and, would you like something warm to drink? Yes, bring it. Like that kind of a mood, winter. Right? But no, they were not at all affected. Just we were not driving so fast, so I had a good close-up look of the picture. And I could see, yes, boy and girl are beyond the sufferings. They don't care anymore about these sufferings, right? Because their desire to enjoy is now so strong, they are able to tolerate any suffering. It doesn't mean nothing to them. Yes, so in this way, who denies the power of sense gratification? Who denies the power of sexual attraction and how it can lift us up above the sufferings of the material world? Who denies what a man can find in the arms of a woman? Right? There is no doubt about it. Right? That there one can find something which can not be so easily found anywhere else. Right? But, yeah, underneath it all is death. Right? Death approaching more and more. Sometimes flirting. Sometimes just quickly passing in front of our face. Here death comes. Sometimes looking over our shoulder. And in so many ways, we are confronted with death. Just on the Spanish farm, 2 weeks ago, some devotees were doing some work, and one was holding on to a tractor, and then an electric wire fell on the tractor, and suddenly the tractor was light with electricity, and he couldn't let go. Right? You always hear of this. Well, it happens, right? Shaking, and he said, like the electricity made everything stop. He just felt like everything cramped up, and he felt like it's going to his heart. And he's just thinking, Krishna, right? And it was summer. Yeah. He said, Krishna. And then he was like thrown back by the electricity, and like survived. Right. It was just death saying, I am near. Not so far. No, I will not kill you this time. But don't think that I'm not near. I am. I'm always there. Right. So, like this, it happens to everyone sometimes on the highway or in some way or other, right? In India, right? You can go to India as a healthy person, young and strong and full of nobility and ready to take on the world, and within less than 8 hours you can be reduced to like an 80-year-old wreck, you know, which is like on the verge of death, a walking skeleton who is like wondering how it all happened. It was just some Indian germ, that a tiny little germ, right? This time death entered into that little germ and told you, I am here. Yes. And Srila Prabhupada did say, at the very end, as he was about to leave this world, he told his sannyasi disciple, he said, don't think this is not going to happen to you. So, this is the strongest argument. This is the strongest argument. We are not saying that
There is no taste in the material world.
It's all Maya. It's all, there is no taste in this sense gratification. It's all false. It's all illusion. It's not true. There's no real pleasure.
That's all true. These are all arguments, but these are subsidiary points.
Right.
It's not the principal point. Because the principal point is really like, while we're playing, death is putting the hands around our throat and is slowly beginning to squeeze.
And now we are being strangled. We said, oh, let me just try one more time.
The classical Gaudiya Vaishnava illustration is a drawing of a frog that is croaking, and of a serpent that is crawling up from behind. And the serpent is just in one bite trying to swallow that frog. But as you know, serpents don't just come and like in big bites in one time swallow the frog. They stretch their mouth around the creature that they're trying to swallow. So slowly the mouth of the frog, the serpent was stretching around the frog. And the frog can be seen as the backside already swallowed and the front side sticking out. And just then, a little fly went in front of the nose of that frog and his tongue was shooting out of the mouth to catch it. So who is the frog? Yes, you can look in the mirror and ask that question. Who is the frog? And then, you can also wonder, who is the fly? Yes, the fly is sense gratification. This was the sense gratification. Here I come. Right. In this way, the sense gratification is like a fleeting opportunity which offers us a drop. This is another problem. Prabhupada says the tongue is like a desert, you know, like a desert anchoring for bliss, for satsidhananda, for the eternal transcendental pleasure. And in the material world, it's a desert, and the tongue is totally dry. And then one drop, sensification, and one drop, followed by frustration. It is explained that this is what happens. We are meditating on the sense objects, and in the end, we remain totally frustrated. This is the nature of sense gratification. So, seeing sense gratification in the context of the bigger picture, then we understand that whether it's good or not can be debated. Right? Whether it is actually enjoyable or not, that we can argue about. But that within the bigger picture, it's just a fleeting moment which will only enter us deeper and deeper into the material energy. It is something like a drug. Right? See, it's like in the 60s it became fashionable to try out different drugs, and the Beatles, they sang Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and everybody knew what it meant. Right. Yes. I guess everybody here also knows what it means. Anybody else know what it means? Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. They the capital letters, right? Yes, I got it. Lucy in the Sky, diamonds. Right. So, yes, it was an advertisement for that thing which everyone was taking in those days, right? To get the other time of consciousness, to break through the ordinary experience of everyday life of the squares who were caught up in their of the establishment who was caught up in the Monday to Friday consciousness of trying to enjoy the material world, and the idea is we're going to make a big step forward. We take this drug and we go into another type of consciousness. A new consciousness. Some sort of semi-spiritual experience, right? And But what really happened was, when a person was on the drug, then the person would experience, I am, you know, breaking barriers, boundaries, I am here exploring new frontiers and entering into new dimensions. And when he came back down on the ground, okay, then he would find that his material entanglement had increased. Rather, instead of having made progress, he'd gone a step back, because now he had his material entanglement from before, and now he had a new entanglement with it as well, which was the drug. So, although it created the illusion of going forward, in reality, it was going backwards. So, all sense gratification does this. Right? It creates the illusion that we are going upwards towards ecstasy, but actually it pulls us down into misery. Yes. Although we get a temporary lift and an experience of going into some form of happiness, the result of it is that after the enjoyment is over, that we find ourselves with an emptiness which only increases every time we try to enjoy another object. We already had the emptiness from all the previous experiences, and now we've added a new one to it. In this way, each time, a little further into the misery. So, in this way, sense gratification, how does it ever make sense? It is the most foolish activity from all perspectives. Nonetheless, due to our previous habits, which are all habits of sense gratification, we have become professional sense gratifiers, and therefore to stop it is practically impossible and very, very difficult. America has really made a culture out of that, right? Everything has to be sense gratification. In Europe, it used to be that there was some items for sense gratification and some things were just functional. Right? A shower was a shower, but not in the US of A. There were pulsating shower heads which revigorated the body, and the soap was enriched with vitamin E, which also rejuvenates and all that, right? Of course, this has now spread all over the world, and everyone has that, right? There's nothing normal anymore. A chair is an experience, and like that, everything is now meant for sense gratification. Once things were normal, right? But now the cup that you drink from is offering you a panorama which will not only incite your senses, but simultaneously is influencing your alpha waves, right? Which will give you a new mental strength by which you can cope with the world, you know? Yeah, there you go. And everything is like this. Your shoes, they have pins inside, right? These rubber pins while you're walking to massage your acupressure points, right? Acupressure massage is the weirdest type of massage that exists in the world, because in acupressure massage, what they do is they go all over the body and they press here and they say, does it hurt? No. Then they go there and say, does it hurt? And then they find the spot. Yeah, that hurts. Okay. And then they go deep with their nails into it and pressure it like, especially heart. This is acupressure massage. I think it's sick. It's not sick. A form of SM, you know. It's like, I don't know what it is, but it's not coming from the higher modes. There's no doubt about it. I think it finds its roots in something called the mode of ignorance. Whatever may be, the point is there, is in this material world, we are all experiencing different levels of suffering. And actually, it is not that the material world is just a big paradise full of wonderful different forms of illusion that one has to deny. Oh no, look at this form. Oh God, so attractive. Oh, listen to this sound. Oh, it's so beautiful. It's like the sirens of Ulysses, let me put some wax in my ears so that I don't have to hear this temptation. It's not entirely like that. There are also horrible sounds, right? Like that you have to cover your ears because two metal, you know, the metal blade of the construction crew is just cutting through another piece of metal, and the screaming of the blade on the piece of metal is like cutting with many decibels right through through your ears. And in this way, or you go to India and a stench hits your nose that you thought could not exist within the universe. You cough, you faint, you feel totally almost ready, you know, to leave your body, and somehow or other you survive, right, just about. So in this way, oftentimes we think that let me just have a little sense gratification to counteract all the austerity. It's just too much austerity. God, I can't handle it more. It will give me a little sense gratification. Quick. Right? When this tendency comes, that the suffering of material existence is too much, and sense gratification addresses itself as an escape, as something you need, take some prasada. Right? This is the solution. Right? Take that big piece of cake. Right? Take, you know, take that pizza, take whatever it is, take it in large quantities, you know. Even although the body cannot deal with it, right? Because we need it. We need it to give us the mental strength to say no to sense gratification. And even if physically we're going to suffer a little from indigestion from all that rich Mahaprasadam which only Krishna can digest and no human being. Right? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Take it anyway, right? And suffer it out. Even that is purification, and it's worth it. It will give us the mental strength to say no. After all, this is what we chant, Sahyabhijaja. We're chanting that the senses are a network of death, leading to death, and that it is this nice prasadam which can help us. It is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya which can pull us through this material world where Maya is so strong. That combined with the chanting of the holy name, which must be done, whether it is taste or not, that is Krishna consciousness. And therefore, 16 rounds, a minimum of 16 rounds, the four regulated principles go hand in hand. Then we are on the straight path to the spiritual platform. So this is how we should somehow or other build up our strength, build up our motivation with deep philosophical understanding, with by taking shelter of the Vaishnavas, of the Sadhana, of the deity, of the scriptures, and then with great in a sense of duty, chant the holy name. And sometimes it will happen that for a moment we feel Vrindavana Natavara, the transcendental supreme dancer on our tongue. For a moment we may actually feel inspired by chanting the holy name. And those moments we keep with us as little jewels, as little drops of mercy, which are giving us like a little taste of what is to come in the future. Stop now, any questions? Yes, it is actually mentioned in the Madhurya Kadambini that not only by inattentive chanting, but by non-apparat. So inattentive chanting is mentioned to be the root of all other offenses. So it's said that non-apparats create new anarthas in the heart, whereas seva apparats, which are all the other offenses that are listed in the nature of devotion in the first 14 chapters. Those offenses, seva apparat, if they are accidentally performed, not consciously, but accidentally, then one just gets reactions in one's service. One gets suffering in the service, but it doesn't affect the heart.
But none of that actually affects the heart.
So therefore, we must be very careful. Of course, this is exactly what's happening to us. That is why the heart is still steel framed. It's said in Bhagavad Gita, if you're not experiencing ecstatic symptoms, etc., then the heart is steel framed.
So steel framed means really be rooted in offense. So sometimes it is thought that, most of the time we are nicely following the scriptures and the instructions of Krishna, and sometimes we make a mistake and there's an offense. Right? But rather it's the other way around. We are practically always steeped in offense. It's a second nature to be offensive, and it's almost, we just can't get out of it. We just keep on doing it. We live in offense. And therefore, we are making again new anattas. But it should be said, it's also said that by chanting Hare Krishna, one can purify himself from more sins than one can commit. So there is some hope there. There is hope there. So yes, we do it. We purify ourselves, we scrub the heart, we throw a little more dirt on it, we scrub it again. But gradually it's getting to be better, bit by bit. And the more we try to seriously avoid these offenses, we can break through. So it's a matter of developing the desire. Some time ago, someone asked a question that some devotees, they've been chanting for 30 years, right, and they really don't feel that they have made so much advancement in one sense. You know, they still have like lots of material qualities in the heart, and they're still struggling with the offenses, and they don't seem to get at all to like getting much taste, you know, for the holiness. It's still a lot of struggle. So, what is it? I was thinking about it, and that day I answered it like, well, okay, I can't say because I didn't chant 30 years, I only chant 25. And in those 25 years, all I can say is that, yes, I haven't changed a bit, not a bit. I'm still the same rascal I always was. The only thing is I have a little more knowledge, so now I know that if I give in to my rascal nature, I get in trouble, so I don't do it. But otherwise, before I was an ignorant, so I would just give in to it. But the same tendencies are there, just the same rascal. But I think if anything is changing, then maybe it's the desire to become purified is increasing. Gradually, with the years, it's feeling like so many years of chanting is still not pure, then you kind of think like you get a stronger desire to be pure. And I think that desire is what we need to cultivate, and that's what will carry us beyond the offensive path. The desire to really not do it anymore is the only thing that's going to carry us beyond these things. Of course, the holy man also automatically purifies the heart. But I think that within that automatic chanting, that automatic purification that takes place, that it automatically brings us to the point where we become more conscious and where we become more aware that we should make a conscious effort. So when it says that one automatically becomes purified by devotional service, yes, one becomes automatically purified, and one goes from the robotic stage of devotional service, you know, just doing it, to the point where one realizes that actually I should make a conscious endeavor. Yeah. And then the next stage is that, that one's desire increases. Any other questions?
I have a topic in the news for you related to this. The purport talks about how devotees try to be.
You want the mic?
No.
For people, it's nice. It takes only a second.
Okay. Okay, this is topics in the news. The purport says that the devotees try to lead the sense gratifiers to devotional service. They help them overcome their offensive sense of gratificatory activities in mind. Now in America, in fact, I read this man on the internet, there are millions and millions of dollars being spent by the federal government, President Bush is behind it. Just like they used to try to spend money to get kids off drugs, now they're encouraging teenagers not to refrain, to abstain from sexual relations until they're married. And they're holding this, the government money is being used to sponsor classes to show kids how sexually transmitted diseases are terrible things and should avoid those. And they print t-shirts for the kids to show a little couple in a silhouette. And then the slogan is, we're waiting. We're waiting. So they're studying, you know, the success of these programs. You know, will it work? And so on.
I come through the show as Jai Shiva Ramadan. It's all his credit. It's no Jai Shiva Ramadan. So I think we shouldn't carry on too long. Thank you very much. That was very interesting. And we would like to have that file. It sounds very useful to the community. So, thanks very much. Okay, I'd like to stop and prepare for the course of the living time last time. Too. So, thanks very much. Shri Prabhupada.
All right.